assumption as my first point in debate has significant potential. And the reason I say that, and that's kind of an economic term, first of all, is what John Meany was saying, that there's this opposition bias, like 68% or something like that, of the wins are opposition. So there's this opposition bias, and I think I can make a claim, and I'm not going to support it right now because we don't have a lot of time, and it's not really worth that much time, that maybe that has something to do with your case construction skills. Okay? Might not have anything to do with supreme opposition skills, no. Probably the fact that we're not paying enough attention to case construction. Maybe our arguments are a little too formulaic, or maybe we're doing silly link arguments, or who knows what it is, but that's a potential. Another thing, I think this is a generic sort of idealistic argument. If you have good ideas, it's nice to test them in the debate context. Does that make sense? Yeah. If it's worthwhile to come up with new ideas about how to live your life or about how a community should live its life, it's even more worthwhile to test them in a debate context. Unfortunately, I think a lot of debaters aren't doing that. They're not coming up with new ideas, and they're just coming up with ideas they think are supposed to win in the debate context, so they're not actually developing any thinking about how to live their life or anything useful or anything really worth their time in terms of testing it in this great sort of intensive laboratory setting. And the fourth argument about why case construction has a lot of potential is that forensics doesn't seem to have made a lot of progress into the public sphere. Even though public debate and discussion is widespread, you don't see a lot of places like the University of Vermont with broadcasting and a web presence and things like that. You see a lot of teams that are relatively isolated from the communities around them. That's the skeptic's view, and I know people, a lot of people are different, and I know especially John Meany's team, I know they do a lot of stuff out in the community and things like that, but I think in general, maybe we focus too much on competition, and so we're not having enough of a public presence to kind of get what we want. And believe me, even if it takes away from competition in the near term, in the long term, you'll have more resources for your programs and things like that, and get better at case construction. I mean, it's kind of weird to hinge that on case construction, but it's the idea that good ideas coming out of a debate community will make that community have a lot of credibility in the larger community around it. Does that make sense? And then the last argument, I think, is that there's a lot more room, just in general, for more meaningful debate, more debate over consequential issues. A lot of times you're debating about things that are not consequential for you, or for anyone you know, or for anyone you're likely to know in your entire life. Okay, so think about that. The peril of case construction. First of all, business as usual hampers creativity. Coaches are busy, you come on with a mediocre argument, and the coach really doesn't think it's that exciting, but he or she will still say, okay, yeah, go for it. Write the speech, or do that, that's a great argument. But most coaches also know that if they just take a little extra time, they can convince you to go try it again. Because you have pretty tough egos, right? After a while, you've lost some debate rounds, and you're used to being told what's going on, what's wrong, and you can improve things. But I think, in general, when you get busy, you start accepting a little less, more average work from your debaters and probably even from your coaches. Also, in the debate community, like John was saying, there's a bias toward the familiar, uncreative, and formulaic knowledge. I don't think I need to go over that again. But one thing that's interesting, the third point that I have down there, is we privilege arrangement over invention. Now, we've talked about ways to organize your arguments and ways that you have to do, this is the kind of case you have to do, things like, you know, just the basic stuff you learn in the composition class. Then we forget to teach you methods of discovering or inventing new ideas. Does that make sense? So think about that, and then we'll talk a lot more about that when we're talking about rhetoric, but just in general, that's one of the reasons why we have this business as usual mentality that is causing the 60% opposition bias. Another thing, another peril, and this is the last thing before I want to split up, is that people tend to backlash in the face of new ideas or unfamiliar methods. Many reasonable people with an intense dislike of the idea that someone might argue the same case more than once. You understand that? A lot of people. They'll announce it publicly, even if you think it's horrible, and there might be people in here. They are reasonable people, and they really, really are angry at the thought that you have stopped cases, that you might have thought of a case before and discovered an opportunity to run it at a tournament. That's a peril, and it's kind of sad, but you know, you've got to kind of deal with that. You've got to keep that in mind. Another thing that why case construction is perilous is that there are many reasonable people who will distrust alternative forms of knowledge, like metaphorical knowledge, like narrative knowledge, like emotional knowledge. Does that make sense? People will distrust that. They want to apply the things they learned in their logic class to debate, and that's it. They don't want to find out about human motivation. They don't want to find out about emotion. They don't want to find out about need, all kinds of other things that are available to the debate method of inquiry. Does that make sense? And last, another thing, reasonable people are your friends, coaches, and teammates. Two more points about this, right? I'm talking about two of the most prominent perils about case construction is that these reasonable people are angry about stopped cases, and they're likely to distrust things that they're not used to, and these people are your friends and your coaches and your colleagues all around you, okay? And that sometimes if you get too new or creative an idea, it's going to have consequences for you and your relationships with other people. So that's those are some of the basic perils of case construction. Doesn't mean it's not worthwhile, and I hope I've convinced you that it's more worthwhile than perilous. But before I go on to the sort of process of case construction, let's split up. If you feel you're brand new to debate, go with Bill, and if you're not, stay with me. Okay.
And John said there's one of you claiming to be a novice. If you've got experience, stay here. If you've done parley before, if you've got some experience constructing a debate, case, stay here.
I'm not sure that I'm giving that much of a sophisticated account of the case construction process, but maybe we'll, I mean, it is better because I'll get a little more attention from Bill. And Bill, how long did Bill be here? But you can help me out because you debated recently, right? I haven't debated much at all in like 10 years, and so I forget what it's like in that 15 minutes. I know what it's like to watch, and I know what to complain about with you guys. God, the case is going to be better, but I'm not the one doing it. You're doing it. You know what I mean? So we're on the process now. These are a couple of cases. We're going to spend a lot of time with this case example. We'll come up with a good case for that, or maybe even another one. And then this is just an illustration that I'll do in a few minutes. Process of case construction: work before, during, and after a tournament. This is an example of one of those sort of metaphorical contexts where people will expect you to cover the whole thing. I'm going to cover before and then cover during. You're probably waiting for me to expect after. Does that make sense? This is another example for that earlier point that I made. For the tournament. Pretty basic. Gather ideas. When you just ask certain kinds of questions, you'll be surprised what kinds of ideas you can come up with. Since presumption is such a crucial thing in debate, right? What's commonly believed, and you're going to try to change our beliefs or change our actions, anything you can do to be more aware of what it is that's currently being done, what it is that people currently believe, you're helping yourself come up with better ideas or more knowledge that'll help you in debates. What is commonly believed or done right now in the status quo? That's just a general question you can ask, and it'll probably generate all kinds of other questions. What is commonly done in the tax system? You don't know that. You probably should find out, because there's at least 3 debates a year on it, right? How many have had a tax debate? Right? Have you thought about it in between tournaments? You probably have, but that's just my recommendation. If you haven't, that's a problem. You need to start thinking about those kinds of things. Another question: what are the most heated current controversies, and what can you contribute to the conversation? This is kind of a metaphor of inquiry that's a little different from how most people think about it. But any important or controversial issue, there's this ongoing sort of conversation about it. People are writing about it. Sometimes some new thing will happen in public that'll generate more discussion of it, and it'll just come to the public attention and ebbs and flows kind of like that. If you're aware of what's going on, what have you come up with? What do you think is your unique contribution to that? Does that make sense? When you know that and you can start listing that, you start collecting those kinds of ideas, those are the kinds of ideas that will generate, hopefully, a good case when you get to the tournament. What's in the news? You gotta know that. What are the common debate topics? That sheet that John Meany handed out is pretty comprehensive. That's good, like 400 of them or something. I was just looking over that before this lecture. It's a good idea to go through that and become familiar with some of those issues. If you don't know what one of those topics is about, you might want to find out. Does that make sense? Also, another thing, not what's in the news, but what should be in the news. That's where you might come up with a new and creative idea. Not what it is, but what it should be. You'll discover something that you have to say that'll help you make a case that's worthwhile and interesting and winning. It should be part of the 60. Maybe it'll be a 50-50 split after you all take my advice. Run your ideas by other people in conversations and practice rounds. Continue developing your most interesting ideas. Don't stop just because you ran it in the practice round once. Bill was saying earlier today when I ran this by him, he said, we come up with our best ideas, we're always in a round. Then we think about them later and go over them, and then later on it would really pay off if we had a really well-developed case. That makes sense? You're constantly trying out your new ideas in conversation with your friends and family, and then in practice rounds, and over time you'll be surprised. You have something interesting and unique to say, and that will do any number of things for you besides help you win more debates. Like, it might get you a job, it might gain you increased respect, it might help you write a paper, something like that. All that stuff pays off. That's a big part of why debate does pay off, and a lot of people forget to do it. this is an interesting thing that I think we can probably stand to spend a little more time on. Stock phrases, it's the four point under the A there. Develop stock phrases to help you with any case. This isn't exactly the same topic as stock cases, but stock phrases are so crucial. I know that like Michelin, I shouldn't pick on Michelin, not even here, but I know a guy in Colorado. And he always says, this is always his phrase every time, and he sounds so eloquent when he says it, with that in mind, our first argument. And he just has that phrase, and it's always what he's going to use to make the transition between his introduction and the main body or the preview or something like that of his speech. Outline, he already provided one example of an outline of speech for you earlier. Put that outline down on paper and start thinking about what phrase could you use in any speech. Does that make sense? And you learn those phrases and use them in your practice rounds. Don't wait until you're fumbling over it in a debate. Does that make sense? You know, I pepper my speech with, does that make sense? It's because it's a really effective phrase, right? You know, think about it a little bit and you'll be a more effective speaker than I am. Do you have any examples? Ready, Chance?
John had that kind of list. I think the kind of thing you're talking about are also, you need to have introductions and conclusions. Mm-hmm. You know, every speech you give, you can start with a variation on a theme.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's just a phrase, I think, go ahead.
I was looking up, wanting to do the extemporaneous speaking, and there's some high school websites that give you a bunch of transition phrases and intro phrases that you could rip off.
Yeah,
50 of them, and just pick the ones that.
That's a great piece of advice I probably should have put in here too. Just remember, there are people putting up web pages, not alone in high schools especially. There's some commercial sites and colleges. Like I know Wetman has some pretty good advice on their site, and there's some Canadian sites, and every country has a few schools that have actually done some work. Put it up on the web and you can go read it, you know? And some of that work will be things like connectives. These are called connectives. What are the internal summaries and previews? Any public speaking text will give you some of these. But if you just sit down and start thinking about how you like to word things, you'll be surprised. You can develop your own sort of distinct signature, and that makes you a lot more confident, and you can spend more time on your arguments and less time on trying to look effective and things like that. You know, so now that I've talked about that, let's move on and talk about this. You know, those are really hard to come up with on the spot, you know, the ones that are good, you know, so work with it. During a tournament, in between rounds, discuss things. Don't always do it because people get annoyed, right? I get so annoyed hearing about the same old stories. I have the same experiences, and I told people about it, and I got all excited, and I talked to my coach about it over dinner my freshman year. But then after a while, you get tired of hearing the same old story, and so people might get tired of you talking about debate. Focus on what's interesting that happened, what was different, or what you have a question about. Discuss those things, at least up to the point where someone might get annoyed and where it becomes clear that it's time to relax, time to sleep, you know, something like that. Discuss things in between rounds of tournament. Especially if it was something really out there that you hadn't experienced before. Anyway, discuss it with somebody so that you can sort of debrief it and you know what to expect later. During preparation time, this is the one I think where Bill or Mark, I guess, will help me with this, because it's been a while since I've been in preparation time, right? Find out the first thing if you or your partner already have any well-developed ideas that apply to the topic, or something that you could link to the topic, right? That's once, you know, 30 seconds, or a minute. Oh yeah, that's that tax case we thought of, right? Get on with it, you know, just discover if you've already thought of some idea that directly, that clearly applies to the topic. I'm not an advocate of loose links. You know, if it's clearly the topic says something and you have an idea that you developed before, time to jump on it and go for it.
Or if someone else has run a case against you, which...
Yeah, or you've heard about it before. Yeah. Case ideas don't just come out of the blue every round like some people seem to believe. All of you have a stock of cases right now in your mind. You're not keeping an index card file or something silly like that because those things aren't very effective. They're always pretty poor. They're not that good. You don't make them really good before you go to a tournament. But you've all had ideas that you like to talk about. I like to talk about... Just as an example, my favorite thing to talk about is the meaning of work. And I like to talk about school reform a lot too, because I did my dissertation on it. But I love to talk about how I like the division of, I like how work, like the history of work as a concept of an economics major. So I have a couple different ideas about how our culture should handle work, what the school should do about it, and things like that. So I'm likely, if I was in a debate round, to make a case about it. That oh man, all these machines are doing all the work. What are we going to do? We have to redefine work in our culture or something like that. So I have ideas like that that I don't have very well developed, because I don't have any debates to go into, but it's things like that. What are you interested in? Develop it. Okay. I think B and C are pretty important. This is kind of what I was going over with that proposition lecture. come up with a statement of the proposition that expresses the thesis of your case, of the decision you want the judge to reach. Does that make sense? It has to meet those standards. Come up with a statement of that. This isn't a statement of it. This is a metaphor. That means, like I said, you have to have an interpretation that links it to a substantive, concrete proposition. Come up with that statement. Write it down. This is going to be the thesis. It should be well worded. It should be the most careful sentence in the entire debate, because it's what's going to help you generate the issues that you have to cover, the stock issues, right? If you don't have that, you don't have anything. Then brainstorm. What are the likely issues entailed by that proposition or topic? Sometimes just the topic might entail something. Sometimes it's the situation of the news that week, and that's why they put that topic in the debate round. It might not just be a simple thing like the criteria and definitions and applications or the stock issues in a policy topic. It might be a very key thing. Maybe it is a definitional issue or something, but it's something that has to go in there because of what just happened. This topic clearly alludes to the what just happened to Diana. I saw that happen in a tournament. Just happened. Diana just died, right? And the topic came up. It was clearly to debate about something because of that problem that happened. Widespread ignoring of that. Widespread, just total ignore the fact, the context, and the current event situation, what happened to Diana, and you just link it to some wacky Social Security case or something. Does that make sense? It's annoying, and it's a reason why the 60%. I love the fact that that's a fact now, because I always thought it was just a perceived bias and people would argue about it. It's a fact. Oppositions are winning more rounds, and it's because of you guys. I think this is another tip I have. You should outline the case once you got that, you know, once you have most of the issues outlined and you've done brainstorming, and the first speaker should start outlining it, right? And while the second speaker, once you get through the first step in the outline, your second speaker shouldn't just be sitting around, should be thinking about extensions or examples to put into the structure of the outline. It's hard at first, and I know a lot of people aren't doing this, but I think you can generate some really fantastic examples and ideas in that 15 minutes or 10 minutes of prep if you just split up the labor like that. Yeah, it's important to let someone go with it, and if you dialogue about everything, it's going to cause you trouble, but you don't have to. Dialogue about the main proposition you're going to do, and then start about the main points of the case, have the prime minister start outlining that case. You think of some examples for that person while he or she's outlining it. Do that together, and then if your example isn't used by the prime minister, you still have it for your member speech. Careful to include all of the main issues. If it's a stock issue, that means your audience expects you to cover it, and you don't cover it, then you don't have what's called a prima facie case, right? At first glance, there's not enough motivation in your case to cause the decision maker to make that decision that's expressed in the proposition. Does that make sense? Okay. I think you should leave the first speaker alone for a couple minutes prior to this. I've seen people try to pass a note to their partner up there, and if you really have experience with that person, you can do it, but I think cognitively, that's really aggressive cognitive theory that someone on the fly, when they're in an intense situation. What if Mark tried to have passed me a note about something I wanted to cover right now? What are the chances that he was in line with my thought enough to write the right phrase down that would trigger the right argument? There's no way. Chances are, if we discuss it for a while, I can say, yeah, that should go in my outline. It should happen before the debate. Don't be in the face of your prime minister. Well, there's only 2 minutes to go before it's time to go into that room. Let the person be alone with themselves, with their thoughts, and get prepared. Does that make sense? Do you have any advice in general about sort of in the prep time?
The thing, because I'm British, the thing that people do in Britain increasingly now is concentrate on the kind of British philosophy style of things, the meaning of the words, mm-hmm. and certainly in terms of proposition, if you know absolutely nothing mm-hmm. about a particular area, the thing that I always think is very important about a lot of the debates that we have is we don't deal with the requirements of what a this house would, or a this house should, or a this house believes debate entail. Because would, should, and believes are all very different things. And whilst you may want to link, this house would do something has a very, very different meaning to this house should do something. And if you can think about those individual terms, should to me implies that there is a future point in which if some particular action is taken, the future will be better because of what you do. This house, is that the right way around? Yeah, this house, yeah. And then this house would, is a different kettle of fish again. There are other things which branch off from that. This house believes requires you to make some statement about the way in which the world works. And if you can think about the meaning of the words, then, you know, you really are doing yourself a big favor in terms of the thesis you're going to advance. Because if you know you've got to say, in the future, our world will be better because of this plan, and that's what this house would or this house should debate talks about, then, you know, you've won half the battle because half your thesis has been written for you. You know, the actual single line statement that you have to make has already been constructed, one half of it. You've just got to fill in the extra bits and pieces. And so that's what we all, you know, I taught my team to really concentrate on the words.
On the fighting word, on see what the words mean and why they're put there. That makes a lot of sense.
Do you feel that would is more passive than should?
I think should has a notion of moral obligation.
Okay.
Should is, you know, you have to do this because, you know, moral obligation, whereas this house would implies, you know, some kind of world in the future which will be better.
I used to think that about should too, and I think debate, some way of talking debate took it out of me, but I'm going to go back now, because should in debate just means like an action should be taken, and that's all it means, but it should does imply more of a moral imperative, and would just mean that some motivation exists to do it. This house would do it, because you think it's reasonable to do it or something like that. So that is important. Oh, I hate that defining this house.
Should implies, according to a syntactic dictionary, implies a moral imperative to act, whether it's beneficial or detrimental to do so to one's person, whereas would just means that we would do this because we perceive, like, because there is some, for some reason, it's what we either normally do or it's what we would receive some advantage from it.
Oh, yeah, it would fit in with our worldview.
Yeah. And I also think that would is just another way of fancy language, like, whereas such and such happened, be it resolved that. I mean, that's not really the way we use those words, but they make it fancier to make the proposition sound more governmental, you know.
Should is like ought.
We ended up having a lot of discussions about that on my team, and one thing that we came to was that if you're saying should, you're saying it's a moral imperative. If we could do it, this should be the way it should be. Whereas would, it seems to be more like, in contrast to one another, this is something we can do and we will do. So sometimes you end up in cases like there should be a universal healthcare system, but you know it's not just because it's not physically possible because we're going to make all the insurance companies broke. We're debating whether or not that's something that should be.
So would has this kind of connotation that, you know, any reason that you can find to do something, you can use to support a would motion. You know, the Democrats or the Republicans would do this or that, whereas should really does entail this idea that, you know, it's in the benefit of everybody concerned. There is some moral obligation concerned. You're not just giving some reasons.
I was going to ask Sean, this is a great sheet. I see a lot of work being done on proposition analysis. What about judge analysis? Is there any perspective that you want to draw from that?
Remember what I said about what the condition of the judge is likely to be? You saw the judge, you know, arrive, and you happen to get up to, you know, because you were losing sleep and took a walk down. You saw your judge arrive home from the bars or something the night before, right? The judge is just, you saw him talking up late in the bar, you know he's tired at 8 a.m. You know, something that's basic, but also what you know about the judge from the past. You get to know judges over time. You all know, have a relationship with me when you see me in the back of the room later on this year, and you think, hey, he's kind of hyper, and he really is sick of formulaic stuff, and he loves anything that John Meany loves, you know, he's his coach. Or, you know some things about me already, right? You know, well, maybe you don't know John was my coach, but I think he did say that in the introduction, so you might, if you picked up on that, and you know John Meany, you might know something about me, believe it or not. You know it a long time ago. But I love that guy. I just love talking to him about everything. I want to run my team just like he runs his team and stuff like that. You know, so you know something about my motivation. Audience analysis always plays a part in what issues you have to cover. If you know, not just based on what Mark Whitmore said, right, you're going to pay attention to this word, the topic, right? Later on when you see him, you'll say, let's pay a little more attention to the definitional issues that emerge from this part of it. What's the scope of the topic? What does that imply about the direction of the change? What's going to be done? Or what is the nature of the motivation that we're going to provide in the case? Very key choice you have to make, and it comes right out of what you know because you experienced that about the judge. Bill knew a lot about me because we would see each other in a lot of tournaments. We'd have lunch together. He and his partner would hang out and talk. We'd see each other. We had a relationship. The two teams had a relationship because we're only 70 miles apart in the front range of the Rockies last year, or year before last. You know, so we know each other. And that's just something that happens in the debate community. It's a community that's devoted to this form of inquiry, and you learn about people's attitudes. And some people you know, I don't know what the heck they think. And so you just have to try to be careful, what would a reasonable person do? But a lot of times, as you gain more experience, you'll know, or your coach will know, or somebody will be able to say something about that judge. And it's not necessarily going to help you win automatically because it doesn't matter who knew what. When I was going to debate him, I still beat him, you know? So there's a lot to it besides audience analysis, but audience analysis is still important.